Welcome to the RC Roundtable Podcast, where we discuss the latest RC hobby news, events, model reviews, and a whole lot more. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RC Roundtable, episode 211. And I'm Fitz Walker. Joining me is Lee Ray.
Hello.
Hello.
And Monsieur Terry Dunn.
Howdy. What did you call me?
Monsieur. French.
Monsieur. Okay. Sorry. I didn't pick up on your accent.
Well, yeah, because it's all muddled anyways.
How's it going up there in the north, Terry?
Oh, it's pretty cold. Yeah, it's chilly out there today. And as I always say, it's not so much the temperature, but the temperature with just the teensiest bit of wind will turn you into a shaking
chill,
girl.
Chill yeah. factor, wind chill factor. Yep. Have you been out and about? Have you taken any toys out into the snow or flown in the air?
No, I haven't. Okay. We talked about it on our last show. I had the little kite thing that I'd put floats on. I have not tried it yet. So that's coming. I promise. I'll tell you when it happens.
It's
coming.
You got a bunch of snow up there?
No. We've had a little bit of snow on and off, but right now there's just a little dusting on the ground. Plenty of ice because it's nice and cold, but not a whole lot of snow.
I saw your video of your wife skating on the pond.
Oh, that was my daughter.
Oh, that was your daughter. I thought it was. Never mind.
His daughter's grown up.
She's 20 years old. But yeah, my wife shot that video. Yeah, the pond out back is frozen. And like I said, there's not much snow. So it's just kind of like a sheet of ice. And she went out there and started skating around. It's not like there's a Zamboni that comes and smooths it out. So.
Challenge accepted. RC Zamboni.
It can get a little rough at times, and then there's holes where people have gone ice fishing. But no, she did pretty well.
So why is it called a Zamboni? Sounds like an insult. Ooh, Zamboni, what are you doing?
I don't know. Is that the guy's name who invented it, or gal? I just assume.
Gal Zamboni. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Sounds like an Italian insult.
Yeah. Luigi is Zamboni.
Yeah. The smooth ice.
So, aren't you guys going to ask me about my screen name? Aren't you?
The Penguin?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm assuming it's, well, you're up north, but I guess that's not right.
No. It's related to the video that we put on Facebook last week.
Can you remind us in the audience?
Oh, the penguin. Sorry, the nun. You're talking about the nun.
Apologies in advance to all of our Catholic listeners, but we used
Sister Terry here.
Yeah, the clip from the Blues Brothers where she's whacking him with a yardstick, and it's me whacking Fitz and Lee for mispronouncing Waco.
Waco?
Waco. Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right. So, well,
being that I'm from Texas, it is Waco, Texas, not Waco, Texas.
They have nothing to do with each other.
You Zero. Have to, well, but they're spelled the same.
Right. Yeah. All right. So, moving on.
It reminds me when I live in South Carolina, there's a local town called, well, locals call it Lancaster. Lancaster, that's it.
Lancaster, yeah.
Lancaster. I call it Lancaster, like the British bomber. And of course, yeah. I get weird looks.
We had a street growing up in A-Leaf called Sinnott, but people who, when you look at it, said Sinot. And when you hear reporters going, "I'm here at Sinot and Eladary Ashford," you're going, "What?" It's Sinnott.
Yeah. There's all kinds of cities in Wisconsin that the way
share
you
with
say
us.
Them, like Two Rivers. You don't say it Two Rivers; it's Trivers.
What?
Yeah, there's all kinds of cities where the locals just take out a syllable or two, and that's how they can pick out the foreigners.
Well, and I think we mentioned this before, but my dad grew up in New Orleans, Louisiana, not New Orleans. It's New Orleans.
New Orleans.
It's like Mississippi is Mississippi to some, it's Mississippi to us.
That's too much. There's a guy, I guess San Antonio is called San Antone.
people call it?
So is it, they call that more of a nickname, not an actual change of pronunciation.
And then there's Missouri, right?
Yeah.
Ah, there you go.
Anyway.
So speaking of names, I don't understand Fitz's. So sign of Zeta.
Yeah.
Or is that Zeta?
I couldn't think of anything, so I put that in because it's related to something I just picked up. So it's I'm not going to explain it. It's dumb.
Cool story, bro.
if you know, if you don't, it's dumb.
What about you, Lee?
Can you pronounce it?
Yeah, Strike Eagle.
Strike Eagle.
Right.
There you go.
Oh, sorry, it's just a play on words. No,
it is a play on words. I will talk about my Strike Eagle later.
Oh, so there's a hidden meaning behind it, too.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
like Wile E. Coyote.
Exactly.
I've got the list of topics right here.
All right.
The very first one is Lee's workbench. So if you want to talk about your Strike Eagle first.
I'm going to sidetrack a little bit because of the photos I have ready to show. But I'll go right to my workbench and give me a moment of your time. Austin is back in Florida, and there is a new rocket that's going up hopefully soon, if not not today, maybe tomorrow. But Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket was supposed to launch, and I'm showing a photo right now that Austin was on this pier with a whole bunch of other photographers to catch a glimpse of this rocket. Now, granted, this photo you really can't tell too much. It's, you know, it's from his phone, but he had some other good footage. But he said they were really close, and his roommate Ryan had his telescope zoomed in on it, and you could see the upper half in the full circle of his telescope. So they were pretty close. And if any of you follow YouTube channels that do live coverage from SpaceX and so forth, NASA Spaceflight channel on YouTube, they were sitting right next to Austin. So he actually got to talk with them. I actually saw him cross across the screen or walk across the screen briefly. No, he didn't get to say hi. He was trying to be good. But I mean, unfortunately, we stayed up all night. They kept delaying and it got scrubbed. So didn't get to see that, unfortunately. But just a fun shout out that is one of the fun things that Austin gets to do while he's out there in Florida is take a trip down to Kennedy Space Center and see a lot of rocket launches. So not sure he'll get to see it when they reschedule it, but cross our fingers.
So somewhat related to that, several years ago, I interviewed a guy who his job was to take the photos that are like right next to the launch pad when all those things happen.
Oh, cool.
Interesting to hear how he does all that setup. Like, they obviously can't be there, so he would set up a camera, and I think it was like sound activated stuff would trigger the shutter, and there was always a possibility that his camera was going to be a molten blob when he came back. So yeah, I'll see if I can dig that article up. It was really interesting to hear how he did that, and he gets some really incredible shots.
It's funny, I don't have this app, and I thought I would, but Austin has an iPhone app that really gives him more control of his camera and can do some really cool time lapses. So he had his GoPro set up and his iPhone set up and to do all that. But he's gotten some really cool photos with that app. So I know he was hoping I would have given him the Sony camcorder to go back to Florida. Yeah, exactly. I need it for Fitz. I told him that. I said Fitz needs it. But that's just kind of cool. So again, hopefully we'll get to share some more of Austin's photos when he sees more launches.
All right, cool.
But,
all right.
But
Strike Eagle.
Strike Eagle. So just, it's going to be in and out. Here we go. I'm working on our RC rescue for this E-Flight. Stop it, you. Anyway, I am working on it. I spent several hours in there, okay? I did get the new engine installed. I'm not going to talk about that. I am going to talk about this photo, which I shared with my buddies. I had to perform surgery on my F-15, unbeknownst to me, after getting the new motors installed and saying to myself, I think I put too much thrust in this bad boy, because I think we're going to easily find the speed of foam, because it is styrofoam.
Can you have too much?
Oh, yeah. And you can ask my buddy Matt Bakari when he flew his Funjet on 5S and made a 20G turn and poof, it just disintegrated. Anyway, I unfortunately came to find that the left aileron on the F-15 was completely whacked. I mean, the supports broke, the metal rod inside had bent badly. I'm guessing that it happened after the, not the fun flight, but we had at Camp AMA or something. Maybe it was in the trailer, but I had just not even noticed it. So I was getting all excited because I was starting to wrap this plane up and, had the ailerons done. I just needed to do CG. So I had to perform surgery. And as I was texting my buddies through the thing, she's resting right now. We'll, she's still under sedation. We'll see how it goes. But, after some finagling and epoxy and bending and yanking and a few cuss words, I did get the elevator back on. That looks way better than before, because I think I've mentioned to you guys this, from the backside, it looked like this. And I was like, whoa, it's a little too much. So they're now parallel like they should be. And I am going to, if you can see my arrow here, and I can zoom in here, I need to reinforce this area right here. And I haven't read the thread on RC groups. Probably need to follow up. But this is terribly a weak link. I didn't think about it at first.
Describe
when we flew it. Excuse me, Fitz?
Describe what that is.
Oh, this is the left aileron. And this is just the foam mold that connects the left aileron servo, and there's a metal rod that goes through here and it pivots here. So this section here that sticks outward has no support. There's no CF, there's nothing, it's just foam. And then there are these two plywood pieces that sandwich together on that foam to support the rod with a bushing. And there's just not enough support. So what I will do is I'll take some probably thin ply, 1/32 ply, and cut a piece to fit around here and sandwich it. I see Terry, though, doing that. Let me think. What would I have done?
And do you think it needs to be re-engineered? Is it because you have more power?
I think it's because it's more power. And it's one of these, neither of you have the Duraply Vampire, right? Have y'all ever flown one? Or is it just me?
For a bit. I had one for a while.
Okay, so we talked about the booms being weak, and Obviously I broke my booms, and I've resupported them, and I have three now, and they all have the booms, and we talked about the new one not having it. This is one of those situations where I think some people had mentioned when they were first flying it that you can easily find, the speed in which this thing disintegrates, and I'm pretty sure that's going to cause flutter, just because there's nothing supporting it there. It's just styrofoam. So that being said, that's it. I mean, I'm happy that I've got the thing back in place. I got control and was able to mix it into my radio. So I think I'll try to do some, actual aileron movements. Right now, it's just elevator. I just needed to get them to set up. But there you go. So I'm making progress, Terry. It'll come soon.
The push rod is a perfect sine wave. Well done.
That was stock. Yes. I had nothing.
But do you think you could use a bamboo like you did on the Vampire?
I could. I was just going to laminate, the top and bottom. I think that's really all I need.
All right. So what's your ETA for Remaiden?
I mean, I'll probably have it done this weekend.
Okay.
But the question would be weather. We've got really bad weather coming next week, so.
Bad how?
And I say bad weather, but in the 20s here, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know where it'll go.
Crappy weather is crappy.
Yeah. As far as the other item on my workbench, I have my Astroflight Malibu. I've made more progress. I'm actually to the point where I'm going to redo the canopy because the stock canopy I made, I kind of did wrong. Probably should have measured more. But once I put the actual plastic part over, it kind of went beyond the perimeter, so it's just too big, and I'll make one of my own on my own. I might use it just to do flights, but I got my new battery, got my new receiver, and all the control surfaces are done. My spoilers are working, so nice. At this point, I just need to do a little bit of tidying up, and I can get that thing in the air. So,
is this a pure glider or a powered glider?
Pure glider.
All right. How are you going to launch it?
High start.
High start. Okay.
So look up Astroflight Super Malibu on the interwebs, and you will see this plane. It's actually the little brother to the Super Monterey that I had growing up as a kid. I do have a Super Monterey kit in pieces, in questionable pieces, maybe 90% complete. I got it at CEF from a guy who when I opened the box, he went, because he was like offering me 25 or something, and the price started going lower after we started digging through the parts. He was like, oh, here, take it. Just some scrap pieces of wood. I think there's some things missing, but I looked at it. I think there's enough to get me by. Plus the plans are there. So okay. That's what you're really paying for, right?
All right. Now, is this the one that you were trying to get together all in a hurry prior to Nats last year?
It absolutely was.
Okay.
2 years ago.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
And is it going to Nats this year?
It's possible. I'll have to talk to you offline about that, in fact.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I might be at Nats this year.
You might be.
I might be.
I might be there to help you.
Oh, that might be fun.
It could be. We'll see. Until you start bossing me around.
Yeah, right.
Who do you think you are?
Vaguely resembles a gentle lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those gliders look the same.
All those gliders, all those 2 meter gliders. Oh, it feels a little bit different. It's got a special place in my heart. I don't know if it's live. I'm not going to pull up the link right now, but I do have a video. I think it's on my Raviation channel on YouTube, but it's a video of my dad and I flying the Super Monterey. And like I said, it's the Malibu is just a smaller version of the Monterey.
Okay, so it's rudder, elevator, spoiler?
Yes. Well, and I added spoilers, so it normally is just elevator, rudder.
Okay. Well, that's going to be neat.
It will be. So, got that going for me. And it's, I will say, this is the conversation between me and my buddies. I was working on the F-15. This is before I found the elevator, and I was making progress, and I was getting things sealed up, and I did a little bit of work on the Malibu. And I came into the house. I said, "Dear, if it comes a day where I can't physically go back in the workshop, like I'm done, I'm never going to be able to step foot in it, just send me to pasture. Just take me out to the woods, drop me off, and then just drive home, because that's my zen. That's my happy place." I don't think I needed that, actually. So it was good to spend some time in the workshop. It's messy as hell. That frustrates me to no end. Like, I really have let my workshop get out of hand, out of whack, but.
Yeah, we took Lee to a farm upstate where you can run around.
Yeah. When you guys do the show without me, you'll say, well, Lee was done. He's no longer in the hobby.
He's in a better place now.
Yeah, there you go. So.
All right, Fitz, your turn, buddy.
Why?
Yep.
Give me a second.
Okay.
While he's doing that, I'm going to add a picture. While he's looking up something, this is something my son just shared with me. It's called a lithophane. He 3D printed this, guys. That is so cool. I mean, it looks like a photo. It's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah. And the video you sent me shows it at first looks like a hunk of plastic, and then when you put it in front of the light, then it's the photo. It's pretty cool. I think
in color, did he?
No, it's not. It's just, that's white. That's white PLA.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I don't have the video here, sorry. So Terry's right. It's, if you look at it in one photo, it's kind of grayish, and you can't see any detail, but you hold it up to a light, and it's like looking at a negative. It's
interesting.
Really cool. But you're right. Doesn't it look like it has some...
Yeah, it looks like it has color. That's odd.
Yeah, so it just... there's a site where you can upload photos and it'll give you the STL or, you know, whatever file it is to understand that the more depth you have in that area, it'll create an extra layer.
Yeah, you're basically 3D printing a filter. Yeah, it's a thin translucent filter. I know a guy used to make his own, like mathematically, he would make his own little planes out of he'd like whip up. What did he use? I forgot the name of it. It's like MathWorks? No. Basically, it was a program I didn't think you could make little planes out of, but he made it. He had his own algorithm. And, you know, a guy had a PhD in aerospace engineering or something like that. But
I haven't seen this, but look at, I mean, the prop movement is pretty darn smooth, isn't
nice
it?
Looking.
I'm sorry for those of you who are listening, but I hope you get a chance to either watch the show or look up lithophane, 3D printed lithophanes, But my son's got this really cool P-38 Lightning he did. And I think it's pretty cool. So I'm looking forward to seeing what else he's going to print. All right, now back to you, Fitz.
How do you spell lithophane? Is it P-H-N-E?
P-H-A-N-E.
Yeah. Okay.
Or is it lithophane? Yeah,
lithophane.
Spelled like it sounds. Lit hop Haney. Anyway, lithophane.
All right, well, you probably see on his workbench, I've got the world's most beautiful airplane.
A plane only its no mother one could ever. Love.
Yeah, a face only a mother could hate too.
Wow.
You can see this is the, of course, Brewster Buffalo.
I like how it looks. It's cute.
You know, it's funny. I'm looking at the top part. It looks like a handle.
Yeah.
Like, that section right there, just like you carry the plane with you. Exactly. Yeah. It looks like a handle.
I'm still working on the canopy parts.
Okay.
They called it an oxygen tank, I think, or something, and it's got a headrest on it.
Take oxygen like right behind your head?
Yeah, that nothing bad will happen there, won't it?
It could be Gatorade. You don't know.
Could be Gatorade. So I've been trying to finish up this. Yeah, the last thing you heard before it blows up. So this is the Blastero 3D printed. They got a couple things. And so I've been digitally working on getting this thing flight ready. And it's about 90% there at this point. This is the radio's installed, servos, motor. I'm really just got to finish up the canopy frames, which will be clear. And what else? Maybe some decals. That's about it. So this has been an interesting project. It's been fun trying to print two different types of LWPLA on my Bamboo X1C printer. And so I've got something fairly nice looking. This is, you can't really see it, but it has a lot of detail. You can see that there's a rivet details all over the fuselage and the wings. And there's a pilot somewhere. I just printed out. Here's the pilot bust I've been printing out. It comes with that one, but two different heads as well. So it's a 3D printed pilot you can get for it. It's got some nice details, 3D printed dummy engine that you can see in there. I kind of just painted it black. It's kind of neat how the cowl, front part of the cowl is held on by magnets. The excess bits and pieces, the screws for stuff, the wings can come off as well. They're held in by a thing. It's got a magnet hatch on the front. You put your stuff in there, hide your goodies. All the hidden hinges on the tail. So there's no control rods. It's all within the fuselage. Just the wings, ailerons have a little bit of a servo sticking out, servo arm, that's it. So it's really well designed. I think it's done generally pretty well. I've had some minor nitpicks, but nothing world-breaking. And some settings on the printer I really need to tune, but in the interest of time, I just spit it out and dealt with it later. So hopefully this, when the weather gets nice, I'll get this out flying. I don't know. This is, for those listening, a company called Blastero, probably mispronouncing their name. We can put the link in our list. It makes a series of 3D printed aircraft. They make a couple different ones. I think they got a P-47 too. What makes them kind of unique is the level of detail they have in the airframe. While a lot of other companies make some pretty nice 3D printed plane, this guy went the extra level to put all kinds of rivet details, panel, hatches, all kinds of stuff in the aircraft, dummy wheels. And of course, an unusual subject like the Brewster Buffalo. Have you guys seen a model, RC model of Brewster Buffalo
anywhere else? Yeah, I think Hobby King used to make one, or still does.
Yeah? Okay, so they may be the only one. Yeah. Other than maybe scratch building one or something.
Yeah, I know there's plans out there for different ones, but yeah, it's a unique subject either way.
Yeah, it is. It'd make a great, you know, subject for like Top Gun or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Look up the history on them. They actually had an interesting history. Apparently, what was it? The New Zealand pilots had a pretty good experience with them, and somewhere in Europe, too.
The Finns did.
Finnish, that's it, yeah.
Against the Russians.
They probably did better, in European theater than in the Japanese theater, the Pacific.
Right, so that one looks like a belly lander.
Yeah, it is. It's a head launch, belly flopper.
Okay.
No wheels.
It's a big fuselage. Is it pretty okay to grab?
I guess so. It's a little bit on a delicate side, so you don't want to gorilla arm it, but it seems reasonably easy to throw, either up underhand or overhand. Probably underhand might be easier. Let me
see. Pay attention, Lee. It's probably going to be you chucking this thing.
Eventually, well, but usually I might have to try to get somebody to do it for me.
So, all right, go ahead, Lee. Sorry.
Because it's lightweight PLA, and I've seen plans, STL files for these before, is this printed without infill? All of this is just designed structure?
Yes. It's basically a shell. There is some supporting structure inside.
But that's created. It's not, it's not made in a slicer. It's part of the original file.
Correct. It's part of the original file. So these are printed with one wall thickness. So it's a really thin monocoque, I guess you could call it, shell, basically. With any internal structure is designed by the designer and not by adding infill to the slicer.
Correct. That's a little different than my 337.
You print it with zero infill.
And are you concerned about running it? I'm sorry. Are you concerned about landing it on one wall of structure,
being
that's lightweight PLA?
I say one wall. The actual front part, nose part, up to about the leading edge of the wing or so, is actually printed several walls thick. It's a little more durable. So they beefed up the front part. It's just a tail and the wings. There is a carbon spar in the wings for support. But the fuselage itself is strong enough to hold up. So I'm not terribly, I can feel it deflect a little bit. So I'm not terribly concerned. Minor damage can be glued back. If it splits or something, I can put some CA in there and kind of patch it up if I need to.
So what's the power system for it?
Some old Turnigy motor I had laying around. 900 kV, I forgot the size, 30 by 20 or something, millimeter or something like that. It's going to fly on, I guess, 3S. It's got a big nose, so I'll probably put a relatively large prop on it, so the 900 kV probably would be a good match for swinging a larger prop. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I'll use 3 or 4S. I'll have to wire it all up and see what it sounds like and feels like, what kind of power's pulling. I still got to glue the motor. It's got a neat way of, you can adjust the distance of the motor. There's a sliding tray. You eventually have to glue it, but it's neat how you can adjust a different length of motor. It's really nice. So this motor is actually a little bit on the long side, but it's something I happen to have close to what they recommended. It was already in the box, so I just did that instead of buying anything special. All electronics are just stuff I had laying around the workshop.
So how are the hinges? Is it like a rod that goes through like a piano hinge?
Oh, that's a good question. It's all self-hinged. It's really interesting. The tail has the hinges are it's very scale-like hinges, and for the elevator it uses literally a piece of filament.
Okay.
Three filament, a raw filament, as the hinge pivot. There's a hole that you slide it through, and then you glue on some end cap, so it's captures it. And I put in, I didn't use PLA. I used some ABS filament for extra strength. Their elevator rudder has built-in pivot points on the stab, so I didn't have to use that. The ailerons have 3D printed dowels. So for lack of a better term, they're used as the hinge points. And so you put it in, there's little receptacles for them on both the aileron and inside the wing. And you glue on the end cap and capture everything.
Okay.
So it looks really nice. They look like, especially the ailerons, were basically recessed hinges, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm. So is the, it looks good.
Yeah.
Is the canopy printed as well?
Yes, I got the canopies over here. They have couple of different options for the canopy, which is some pretty interesting thinking. Give me a second to go walk over here. So you have, I'll grab the frames. So you actually have two or three options for the canopy. Well, two options. Okay, so you can print out basically a opaque canopy with the frames and you paint it or whatever like this. It's just 3D printed. The window panes are solid and you just paint them black or whatever, or blue. Or you can do is print out the frames that are open. They actually print out with little panels that you break away. So okay. It's printed as one piece. You break away the panels and now you just have the frame. And then they give you another file where you can print out a solid plug so that you can either vacuum form or heat form your own plastic, you know, from a they show it like a Coke bottle or, you know, 2-liter soda bottle, or you theoretically can vacuum form it too. And so when you do that, and the piece will fit inside, the glass will fit inside the frame. So now you have nicely formed plastic, clear plastic that you can fit in as glass and glue in.
It's interesting.
Yeah, pretty clever. That's pretty nice.
So which direction are you going to go?
Well, I'm going to go with the, I'm going to see if I can heat form. I got a bottle of soda I've been drinking, so it's almost empty. So I'm going to try to heat form the plastic over the plug and put it inside the frame.
All right.
I did something like that years ago. I made a cowl for a Gillows plane, replacement cowl, by heat forming it. And it seemed to work relatively well. So it'd be interesting to try it over a real plug. I printed this in ABS so that it would withstand the heat better. Then PLA would just melt.
Yeah.
So by using a plug and some heat treating, hopefully that'll work. I do have a vacuum forming machine, but I figure most people don't have a vacuum forming machine themselves. So I thought I'd use you put this inside a soda bottle, you know, 2-liter bottle, whatever, take a heat gun over it and shrink it over, pull it over. And that should be good enough for government work on getting this done.
All right. And then all the areas behind the windscreen are just kind of flat panels that you can bend around or no compound?
Yeah, they actually give you plugs for the rest of it. I don't think you need it. I did print out the plug for the rear part of the Bruiser Buffalo is just as a big greenhouse of glass. Yeah. And the rear one seems it might have a little bit of a compound curve to it. So I did print out the plug for this one. The center section, I'm just going to just bend some sheets, clear styrene or whatever around it. It shouldn't need a plug. And theoretically, this actually, I'll grab the plane. So this meaning the centerpiece of the canopy actually will slide. There's slots in the fuselage, and so it's supposed to be able to slide open and close.
That'll be interesting.
Manually, of course, but they made provisions. I don't know how well it'll work. I haven't snapped it in yet, but there's provisions in the model so you can slide open and close the canopy.
All right. Clever.
Yeah, it's some pretty impressive design work on that. It's taking a little bit to get it done. It's for a 3D printed model, it's probably taking me the longest to get it put together. Just because it's, I think, more intricate than the typical 3D printed plane. But it does go together well. There was a thing because I guess something wasn't set quite right in my printer and some of the internal tracking. I won't go into details, but there was a couple of setbacks I had to work out.
Well, I was going to ask, did you do that all on one printer?
Yeah, one printer. I used a Bamboo X1 to do everything. It didn't really take that long. The printer prints pretty fast. Though I think that was one of my problems, is I was probably printing it too fast. I was printing stuff, and I was getting some failures, and then I looked up, and they're like, yeah, you're going to use this, print slower. So you got to slow things down, I think, for some of the foaming PLA.
Right.
I used two different brands, so I had some going back and forth. I had to do some trial and error. There's one other thing. I might have to disconnect from the headphones. One sec. Give me a second. So, Nick, an old college buddy of mine, stopped by to visit. He was on his way down to do some stuff. And he said, hey, I got something for you. Do you mind if I stop by? And I said, sure, what you got? Because he didn't tell me what it was. And so he brought me this.
Ooh, a helio chopper.
A helio chopper, yes. I don't know if you recognize it.
It's Helicopter.
Helicopter. Helicopter, yes. Yes, old chap. This is a RC helicopter. It's a particular type. Do you recognize it? Probably don't in its current.
I'm going to guess it's a Cricket.
Correct. It is a Cricket. Very good.
That's what I was going to say.
It is a Cricket. It's a GMP Cricket, but this, I think, is a kind of a rare version of a Cricket. Because it's the huge 300 version with the, you know, the bubble canopy.
It's like a dragonfly head.
Like a dragonfly head, yeah. So this one is neat because I don't think I've ever seen one outfitted with a dragonfly head. Because it's not just the cowl that makes it the dragonfly head. You've got also, you see the support structure on the tail boom. You got this sort of lattice truss work, or not truss work, kind of, what do you want to call that? Just...
Support.
Scale-like supports for it. And I don't know if he's flown it. I might have to do some tweaking on it. But he said, here, Merry Christmas. And this is really pretty cool. This is, this dates back to the 80s, mid-80s or so. The early 80s, maybe.
So it's a horizontally mounted engine with a belt drive? Oh, no, that's just the... How does this work? Yes. Horizontal single cylinder engine. So the engine's like laying on its side. A belt drive to the tail rotor.
Yeah. So, yes. It might be missing a piece because, it's missing the wire for the pitch thing. So it's gonna take some restoration. Obviously, it's very dusty and rusty. I don't know what condition the engine is. There's a clutch right here. So you got a starter at the end. There's a centrifugal clutch. Bit of a belt reduction, some gears, you got a swash plate, no collective on it. This is fixed pitch.
Okay.
But I thought it was cool. It's like, hey, a little, the Hughes 300 version of the Cricket.
And yeah, like you're said, amassing a pretty impressive vintage helicopter collection.
Yeah, that is really cool. So I really need to get to start restoring some of these because, I got several different ones.
Yeah.
Because I really would like to see how these things fly compared to modern stuff.
Or maybe you don't.
Yeah. These things are not easy to fly, but I guess that's part of the charm of these things. Yeah. These were
Modern gyro can.
Yeah, you can put a gyro in without the weight penalty because the original gyros were really heavy, but now I can put a little PZO gyro that weighs only a dozen grams, something like that, and it'll barely notice it. Settle the tail down. So I want to thank Nick for that. It's really cool. It's got different landing gear, too. I just noticed that. Skids are got different arms.
Era would that have been new?
What, mid-80s? 84, 85, something like that?
All right.
I'd have to look it up, but maybe earlier than that. Crickets, because I got maybe like early 80s, 82, something like that. Wow. Somebody can correct us in the send us an email, or I can look it up, but they do date back pretty, at least the mid-80s at latest, if not the early.
Okay.
The Cricket version may have, maybe came out later versus the regular, the 300 scale version may have come out a little later than the regular Cricket, but I'd have to double check my history on that. But I do remember reading about Crickets in the RC Modeler. Really early, like 82 or so, roughly. I think when they first got the issue. Actually, I have that issue. There it is. Yeah. Yeah, I've got a box of stuff there. So, Lee just pulled up a picture. I have the side tanks, fuel tanks, and I think there's a shroud for the cooling shroud and a fan. The box is somewhere. I put the box somewhere. I'm not sure what I did with it. There's a few more goodies. So I got some goodies. I got the blades and odds and ends. Oh, he also, what did I do with it? Ah, dang it. Completely forgot to think I put it up somewhere. He also brought me another thing I don't have here to show you. But it is a partially built fan trainer.
Oh,
from,
yeah, that is.
The old Paul Willenberg one that was in Model Aviation News, early 90s. he bought me one of those too. That's the framework is all built. It just needs some assembly and some finishing off. And I have one already that's electric powered. But I thought, well, it might be neat to build the original glow powered one. The original one used a Cox 049 engine in it.
Right.
And of course, that was kind of a pain to do in the shroud and whatnot. But
right.
I think it might be a fun, especially since I met Paul a few years ago, and I got from him the actual engine he used in his fan trainer all those years ago.
Was it a TD?
Yes, it was a TD 049. I think he modified it slightly. I had to double check. If I remember correctly, he had done some minor modifications to it. So yes. I think he changed the direction, maybe. I'd have to double check. But So I thought, well, that might be a good power source for it. Put in the actual engine he used in his article plane.
Yeah.
And with newer lightweight electronics and stuff, it probably would fly pretty decently.
All right. And some of that special blend Fitz fuel in there.
That's right. Well. Mix up the special juice. We're ready to go.
All right. Cool.
All right, so that's my new stuff for the week.
Thanks all right, again. So when can we expect to see the Buffalo take to the skies?
Pretty soon. We know the weather, like Lee said, the weather is not good. So whenever the weather gets up better, then I will do it. Because I got that, and I still have to fly the Old Crow RV-8 as well.
You have flown it. You just need to fly it more.
It has you flown, but I didn't fly it.
Right. Okay. I didn't catch that distinction. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But as I told, I think I told you, I know I told Lee, I did an experiment this past weekend, and we had one good day of flying on Saturday. And so I went out with my partially taped up eye and says, I wonder if I can fly something. And I ended up flying two things. So I was able to see well enough to fly.
Okay.
So...
just not well enough to land. You came home with two, right?
Yeah, it was funny. Okay. So one of the things I took out was my old Saab Gripen.
Okay, not a floater.
It's not a floater. So I took two planes out. I took both are EDFs. They were just something quick and easy. I flew the Avanti, my old Freewind Avanti. I figured that one's super easy to see. It's all brightly colored and super stable, super docile. For EDF, it's like a trainer almost. And so I took that up and kind of flew around. I said, hey, I can see this thing just fine. And I see other stuff. I said, okay, well, I'll try to bring up the Gripen. Of course, the Gripen, there were several things that probably should cause you pause. I haven't flown it in a long time. Brand new radio that I put on it.
So it's on a trim.
So it's probably out of trim. Yeah, because I didn't copy a program over. I did it from scratch because I did all kind of funky programming with it. So this was all highly experimental. But I got it up and I was flying it around. I noticed, man, it seems kind of twitchy or sensitive on the ailerons. But I was able to do it okay, but I didn't end up doing a lot of the stuff I wanted to. I did briefly try the flaps. The new flap mixing I was playing with, but it seemed a little skittish. So I got it down in one piece, and I look at the programming. Well,
negative expo.
I had negative expo.
I was going to say the same thing.
I wasn't paying attention right to the graphs on the radio, new radio, and I had negative expo. That's why it was so spicy in the air.
If Fitz ever says your ailerons are twitchy, yo ailerons is twitchy because Fitz likes it fast.
I like it a little sensitive. I'm not crazy, but I like it a little. Yeah, I've flown other people's planes. You're moving the stick like you're mixing dough. It's like, where's your ailerons?
Yeah. Meanwhile, I fly Fitz's plane and I just look at the stick and it's done three rolls already.
So I'm curious, do you add expo to your, let's say you have a three position switch. 0, 1, and 2. On 0, do you include expo or do you only add expo to 1 and 2?
Define 0, 1, and 2. Which one is high rates?
0, well, 0 would be high rates, and then 3 would be low rates.
Oh, you guys okay. Are...
Do you go backwards?
No, start, you're right. The highest
top is high, is
what, yeah, okay.
And then down. So zero is that's highest, one mid, and then low, whatever.
Oh,
so,
I thought we had another Velcro situation.
But I noticed when you do it, when you're programming the radio, it says zero, one, and two. So do you add Expo in zero?
A lot of times I do. In the high rates, on a lot of planes, depending on the plane, of course, but a lot of planes, I will put a little bit of Expo. Not a whole lot, but I mean, I may put 20% in zero. Yeah.
In zero? 20 in zero?
That's the high rate.
Right. Expo. That's complete rate.
Yeah, you want more Expo, the more travel you get.
No, well, I guess that I'm saying, I know it does, but I desensitize because when I fly a glider, I don't want too much. So I start at zero on zero, you know, I'm at zero Expo on zero, and then I bump it up 20 to 40%. So I have a lot less movement.
Here, help me understand. Say high rates or low rates instead of zero, one, two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So well, I'm low rates. High rates to me, I have complete. I have from zero to 100. You know, left and right.
Okay. What about your Expo at that setting?
Okay. Zero.
Zero Expo at full.
I want full control. When I'm like, if I want to pull back immediately, I want full elevator response.
Interesting.
This is a good conversation. So I
set it up just the opposite.
Okay.
As I go into the lower rates, I take out the Expo.
I don't want that. No, I do it the opposite.
So you go from zero to mushy to mushier.
No. So are you adding dual rates though as well?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So the rates are going as I go from zero to one. the control deflection is reduced at full. So I'm adding dual rates, more and more dual rates as I go from zero, one, two, or high rate, mean rate, low rate. As you go into low rate, you're not going to need as much Expo because you're already desensitizing the control surface. So you're adding Expo to a desensitized control deflection or a reduced control deflection. You're going to get just
really ever flown? You know what? We're probably talking the same thing because you've flown my planes with my dual rates and you've had no problems with it.
So maybe we're talking the same thing.
Inverted there. But I'm just saying when
do you know what I'm speaking?
when I add dual rates, I'm adding Expo. So
when you say you're adding dual rates, what do you mean?
When I'm decreasing the throw rate. Okay. When I'm decreasing the amount of throw. So like if I were flying a glider and I say I want half my rates, okay? I want 50% of my rates. I'm adding Expo because I want very little movement when I'm in a glider. When I'm in a glider, I don't want to be making a lot of moves. So what if I'm in a thermal or something? I want my movements to be so smooth that I'm not pitching that plane around.
Well, maybe that makes sense for
look a at Terry. Look at Terry.
I'm processing. I don't play sport planes.
We need to get together.
It just seems like you're adding insult to injury.
You show me your programming. I'll show you mine.
Yeah, because high rates, I want the full deflection, but I don't want it too sensitive at the middle.
Yeah, I do. I want everything. I want to be able to quickly respond. And I know. I'm looking at Terry. I want full control. If I'm at zero, I want everything. That's me. And I'm curious. Now that we have this conversation going, we have listeners. Of course, they'll probably 80% of the people will bash me. But I know there are going to be people out there that say, "No, when I'm at zero, I want everything. I don't want to mix anything until I start adding." You know. Reducing the amount of throw I want.
Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, team fits.
And again, and maybe that's a thumb. Maybe right. I'm just going to say maybe that's a thumb thing. You know, I'm going to throw another situation.
Right, thumb flyers.
I'm a thumb flyer.
Troglodyte.
But I'm glad you asked that question, Terry, because I think this is one of those like we asked that video at the E-Fest. Are you a pincher? Are you a thumb guy? We took photos of everybody's hands on the radios. I wonder how other people program.
We should put a poll on our Facebook or something.
That's a great idea. That's a good idea, Terry. You're going to have to figure out how to put that together. Of course, we need to show the programming too.
The diagrams.
Yeah, exactly. This is Lee's stupid. Yeah, this is Lee's stupid programming. This is Terry's programming. Which one do you choose?
And does it correlate to their Velcro tendencies as well?
Oh. And of course, here these two guys are on the same page though. So maybe that's my odd man out. You're the odd Velcro guy, Terry. I'm the odd Expo guy. Terry's just odd. I mean, excuse me, Fitz is just odd.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you heard it, folks. How did you program your Expo? More Expo with more throw, like me and Fitz, or less Expo with more throw, like that guy?
Yeah, that guy.
Write in. Let us know. Maybe we can put a poll on Facebook or something.
Maybe.
As we said. Yeah,
I don't mean to act shocked, but I've never heard of this method before. And so,
well, I'll get my radio out. I'll send you pictures.
I believe you. I believe that you do it this way. I just never heard of anyone doing that.
Well, I want to see your programming. I mean, it's possible I'm just completely not saying the way you want to hear it, but I'm
I don't know.
I do want to see your radios.
You're saying at full throw, you have zero expo. That is
That's correct.
The opposite.
Crazy?
You're doing it wrong.
No, just it's different. It's you. You're specialty.
It's special.
I have mastered that art.
All right.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So what? Let's go back to the original question, though, was what amount of expo are you starting with? What percentage of expo are you starting with?
I usually rule of thumb at about 20 or 25%, depending on my calibrated feelings.
Okay, so you go from 20 down to zero?
Usually I'll do 20 at high rates, probably around 10, 15 at mid rates, and probably zero if I use a super low rate.
Terry?
Sometimes I use two, sometimes I use three. It depends on the rates.
When I'm first setting up a new model, I'll typically just put 25 or 30 on every rate setting, and then I can adjust from there once I start flying it and see what I like.
40.
40? How do you even control your plane? You're at low rates at 40?
Yeah, I can. Okay. This is great. I love this. I'm so glad we have this conversation. This is why we have to have conversation. This is why we have a podcast. And I'm okay to be bashed, but I go from zero full rates. I mean, yeah, full rates. I go to 20 and then I go to 40. And that's just happenstance. I mean, it's a variety of airplanes. But I will go up to 40 with dual rates down to 80%.
You kept citing gliders. So you're saying even in your sport planes.
Like my Tiger Cat, my P-38 Lightning right here, and she's really. I mean, again, it could be a thumb thing, but when I'm in the air and I'm making nice slow turns, scale like, I don't like to have a lot of movement. She's running fine. And that being said, I will also wonder how much deflection, full deflection, I have. Like, I don't have. Remember that meter, that magnetic meter that Matt brought for your RV fits?
Yeah.
It's like, I probably have too much throw sometimes, so that's probably why I have to reduce mine. And we should get a picture of that and introduce that in another podcast. That was a really neat tool that he had.
I need to make those, because those are 3D printed. I wonder if they're available magnets somewhere, or I could maybe draw one up or something. Print out.
Did you take a picture? I think you did, right?
I did. I took a couple of pictures of it, yeah. What we're describing is, it's a deflection meter that basically... how do you want to describe this? Think of a little square block, maybe an inch by an inch by half an inch thick, that has a carbon rod sticking out perpendicular on one side, and embedded in there are magnets. And there's another block, same block, basically just nothing sticking out of it. And so they clamps to the control surfaces because of the magnets inside. And then the rod sticks straight back out, or you can move it to the side, whatever. I'll have to get to that in a second. And so what it does is it gives you a visual representation of the control surface as it moves up and down. And so you take another one, for example, on the elevator, and you stick it on the elevator, and then you can sort of kind of harmonize them together so they kind of point to each other, and you can tell if the control surfaces are aligned or misaligned really, really easily, because it's magnified by the length of the stick, which is about maybe, 8 inches, roughly, you think, Leo?
Yeah.
Something like that. And so they're super simple to make, and I think he said he bought them from somewhere, but they were just 3D printed blocks with magnets embedded in them in a carbon rod. But it helped me, because the reason why we did that, because I noticed, he said when he flew to RV8, he said it had a little bit, it needed a bunch of aileron trim. And I thought, it seemed a bit more than it should have. And I looked at the tail, and it looked like the elevators were not quite aligned. And then he put this, maybe because of my one eye, so we put these things on, and they were off. And so we were able to tweak the control rods so they were level. And so I had never seen anything like that. And he said, all the pattern guys use these things.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was brilliant. Simple, elegant simplicity.
All right. So I did not expect to have that conversation tonight.
squirrel.
Expect the unexpected.
Yeah. Right, so it would make sense that I would be up next with my workbench stories, but I don't have any. I haven't really been doing any work down here since we recorded last time, but I have a mystery. Maybe you guys can help me solve the mystery. So I've got this plane here. This is an old GWS Pico Cub without the wings on it. And I bought this at a swap meet because it has the cool IPS twin drive. So two motors on one gear drive there. And I've had strange things happen when I fly it. So it's a Pico stick, basically, right? So how much can really go wrong? Well, interestingly, plenty. What's happening is I fly it, and about a minute, maybe 2 minutes in, all power to the receiver cuts off. It's like you unplugged the thing. Only I haven't unplugged the thing. So initially I thought the BEC was overheating, so I swapped it for another ESC, and that happened again. So then I swapped it from, I think originally a 5-amp ESC to a 15-amp ESC with a bigger BEC, and I test flew that last weekend or 2 weekends ago at an indoor thing up here. Same thing. 2 minutes in, all power goes out and it glides down to the ground. So I'm not sure why it's doing that. My theories are maybe one of the servos is either slightly stalled or for some reason pulling too much current and is overheating even this bigger BEC. Or here's a real long shot. Maybe there's something wrong with the circuitry on this old Spectrum receiver and it's overheating and somehow cutting the circuit. I don't know. It's weird. Although I do know that after it comes down, if I just unplug and replug the battery, everything resets and it starts working fine again.
Are you getting a blinking light from the receiver?
When I plug it back in?
No. When you go to get it, does it have any light on?
No, I mean, it's dead.
Nothing.
There's no juice active at the receiver, which is what makes me think that it's the BEC involved. Like the BEC just pulls the plug. So,
thermal overload.
Yeah.
Just to try, do you have a small, 4.8 battery? Something tiny that you could add and be the dedicated receiver battery and see if you can just bypass the BEC? Pull the power plug from the BEC and just try a separate receiver battery?
That's not a horrible idea. Or a separate BEC. Yeah, that would be a pretty easy modification to try.
So, just to see if it's the BEC versus the receiver.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, obviously.
What I'll do first is I'll just hook it up to a watt meter and just cycle the servos and see if they're doing any funny numbers.
But the smoke appears.
Well, I would think I would have seen the smoke by now. But
he said it's an old GWS. Is like one speed controller?
Yes. Originally, I think the first two speed controls I had in here were 5-amp GWS. This is a 15-amp GWS. And you can see how big that
Yeah, I think those old ones were linear BECs, not switching ones.
Definitely linear, but yeah. It's only two servos, and it's only converting power down from a two-cell LiPo. There shouldn't be a whole lot going on there.
Well, those were designed for, like, 5 or 6-cell NiCad, right? So you are pushing the voltage higher than what they were designed for.
Not necessarily. A 6-cell NiCad at peak is going to be around 9 volts. Not quite 9 volts, and here I'm looking at 8.4. So
they settled down to 1.2 volts itself pretty quickly, though, don't they?
Probably, yeah.
Oh, but okay, but I just thought.
Yeah, it's a plausible theory. I'll look at that. So, all right. So those are good things to at least troubleshoot and see if I can come forward with an answer. If any of you listening have ever experienced this or something like it, let me know what your thoughts are. So, anyway. That's what I've been wrestling with. Yeah. What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing at nothing. I am not laughing. I am not laughing.
All right. Well, speaking of no laughing matters, right now, Southern California is in a bad spot. Like, there's like unprecedented fires and things going on out there. And to add insult on top of all that injury, there was an incident a couple days ago, and arguably, we don't have all the information yet, but one of the fire bombers. Was it one of the Canadair bombers?
The 415s.
Yeah. It looks like one of those had a drone strike and punched a nice hole in the leading edge of the wing. So, yeah, that's bad juju in all kinds of ways. So, did I get anything wrong on that recap there? Is there additional information?
We confirmed it was a drone?
I will say I've had several conversations about this, so I don't know how much you want me to ramble on. You can just wave at me or cut me off. You've got the power, but...
just the facts, man.
I will... So, from what I've read, and Terry said it very eloquently, we do not know everything. I mean, everything we're getting is secondhand, really. I mean, there's not been an official statement that I know of, except to say that, yes, a drone hit this aircraft. I did hear just a couple of hours before we started this podcast that plane is back in the air, that they've already made repairs. So that's a good thing. Good. Yeah. And I have so many different paths to talk. I'm going to talk about that right now. When the FAA had the NPRM to decide why 250 grams was the weight to not have to register that drone, it's because they talked about the power impact, whatever the Newton force or whatever the algorithm was on what could cause enough damage to bring down an airplane. They said 250 or less should not cause a risk.
Catastrophic
risk. Thank you. And in this case, they were absolutely right. I mean, it did punch a hole in. One of the rumors I heard is that the pilots didn't know they hit anything until they landed. Like, that's the amount of pitching it bounced off. They maybe felt something. But the point was, they said they didn't know they hit it until they were on the ground. And when I'm hearing, looking at Terry, he's going to say something.
I'm going to say a few things, but finish.
No, so my point being, that is the 250-gram limit. And it appeared to have been a DJI Mavic Mini 3. Judging by the photos that people have seen, I pulled up a Reddit thread and read the articles, and it all looks like that. They have said that there's probably enough parts or components to get serial numbers and find out who it was. One rumor that was spread that the guy was recording, he was putting stuff on YouTube, he was in the air and possibly over the TFR, which is a huge no-no. So that's another whole situation. But I had started my first comments that this is a plane flying high speed over water where, by the way, there was no TFR. And the question out there was, is it possible that this person took off with a DJI, not within the geofence, not within the restricted area, so he could have taken off, stayed over water under 400 feet, and this plane ran into it? And there's a difference. I mean, I'm not saying that this guy is not responsible. He is. But the point is, he was flying a sub 250 allowed. He was flying outside the TFR, if it was allowed. Okay. Didn't have to notify anybody and was thinking he was probably safe under 400 feet until these aircraft were flying. Was it dumb to fly? Yes. Don't get me wrong, guys. I don't think you should have been doing this unless you were with the media or unless you had a waiver and you had a reason to be there. But again, the plane survived. They fixed the damage. This guy's going to get in trouble. But my question overall, going back to all this, is why didn't the FAA have a TFR over the entire area where the guys were picking up water? Wasn't it extended?
So you just threw down a bunch of information I wasn't aware of. I assumed this happened over a drop site or near one, but this was at a water pickup site?
Right. I don't know that. I'm proposing that. If he had taken off because it was a DJI, they have geofencing. So how would he have been able to take off if he was within the TFR?
I heard that the pilot didn't know he had hit it when he hit it. It wasn't until he got back and landed and did the inspection and said, hey, why is there a hole in the wing?
And what are all these plastic parts in there?
Well, regardless of whether they felt it at the time, it caused significant damage. It punched a hole through a wing. So I remember when all this stuff was first coming down, a lot of people were trying to argue the fact that anybody hitting like a Phantom 3, that thing was just going to explode into a million pieces, not cause any damage. Well, this is a considerably smaller hunk of drone, and it still punched a nice clean hole through that aluminum leading edge.
Well, the other side of me is like, could that plane have had other issues? Could that metal have been questionable to begin with? You know, I'm just saying, because it was a Mavic 3. Did you ever see the footage, though, before, during the NPRM, when they actually had a Phantom, a large Phantom, you know, running into something and showing the damage, and it wasn't punching holes?
Well, was it the Phantom speed or was it the airplane speed?
Yeah,
like, how fast are they hitting it?
Because, all I know is that they had a Phantom hitting something, and the Phantom was in a million pieces.
Force is not linear with speed. It is actually exponential, right, Terry?
Yes. Well, so, all right. So I should have written a list here. But also, it hit the leading edge of the wing. What's not far from any place on the leading edge of the wing? The propeller, the air intake. It could have been much worse than it was. I'm glad it turned out the way it did, but I don't know. I would not try to downplay the seriousness of this thing. And I think we agree that whoever was flying this thing made some poor decisions at a minimum, even if it was over a water pickup area.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I guess the real question is, how deep was their poor decision making? We don't know. We'll find out.
And it hit the wing. What if it hit the canopy or the cockpit glass?
Yeah.
Oh. But anyway,
yeah. Yeah, I think there could have been easily some much more dire scenarios here. Now, Lee, you were talking about the 250-gram limit. My recollection of that is different. I thought that was based on these analyses that predicted a drone in free fall and if it hit somebody on top of the head. That's where the 250 came from.
I think that's a factor. I think it was one of the factors, but I think the 250 had to go against an aircraft. I think that was one of the added points about the weight, not only hitting someone in the propeller blades, but the fact that an aircraft should survive, a general aviation aircraft.
The inertial energy?
Would have survived hitting a sub-250-gram aircraft. And that's right. Drone. We'll just say drone. But if it's a model airplane, a UMX model, or a DJI Mavic Mini.
Well, it did survive. It may have damaged it, but it did survive, technically speaking.
Yeah. We should try to find that. I think it was in the whatever the 100-page thing of was the first registration proposal. So we'll have to look that up and see. If anybody out there knows where the 250 came from, it would be interesting to see. I mean, it doesn't matter at this point. We're stuck with it. But, it's, to me, a very close call. Is this the first instance of... No, it's not. We've had aircraft hit.
The Black Hawk in New York.
Yeah,
helicopter. Yeah, the Black Hawk, and then I'm sure we've had interaction between full-scale and RC planes before, but I'm just thinking multi-rotors. And everybody's been saying for a long time, it's bound to happen. Well, it was, and it did. So, what do you think will be the fallout from this, if anything?
No idea. I obviously got a lot of press, so they may make an example out of a person. But it depends if they were legal or not. Like Lee said, it could possibly be that they were technically legal where they were doing, even if it was a bad decision. I guess it really depends on more data.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll keep our eyes open to see how it develops.
This is a long conversation, and I'd like to hear a lot of input from our listeners. Which, by the way, I've been monitoring some posts on Facebook and the iFlyMA about this, people bringing it up, people having arguments, some people just bashing drones completely. And, you know, I'm with you. However, I got to tag on my little caveat here is that I am a supporter of drones when it comes to emergency help, emergency assistance. I don't have a problem if there were emergency responders using them with LIDAR, infrared, looking for hotspots. I support that. Again, as long as they're following rules and regulations that are aware of the flying aircraft nearby. That's the key. The number one rule is to avoid full-scale aircraft. And that obviously didn't happen here. But I think what the FAA should do is clearly get a better handle on your TFRs. I mean, again, I'm throwing the water as an option. It may not have happened there. It may have happened over the land. I could be wrong. But I was surprised that they didn't have it over the water where those aircraft were picking up water. Because if you look at Brownsville during SpaceX launches for Starship, they've got a huge TFR that goes out into the Gulf. So why didn't they have that here? So, again, minor mishap there, and I don't know if it would have caused anything, but I still question, this is the question for my fellow DJI owners. Gosh, and I'm going to add something here. I don't think the DJI would allow you to take off in a TFR, number one. That being said, I heard there was some announcement that DJI was going to disable that feature and allow a pilot to override that as long as you had like your email connected or a phone number connected to the app, and that you were sending an approval, like you were saying, I am going to fly anyway.
Catalyst for them doing that?
I don't know. I went to a thread to read more about it, and there are pilots that are thankful because they want to have that ability to take off. To maybe there are some locations that they're being told they can't fly and they can, and maybe it was just miscalculating the distance. I don't know, but I did see something in the news about that.
So did you see that DJI is actually shutting down a geofencing feature?
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, sorry.
So reading something?
Yeah. Sorry, I was reading it and I missed what you said. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, bring that up because I don't have the actual words. What's it say?
So it's saying that, do you want to share it or just want to read it? It says it's shutting down a geofencing and replacing it with a warning system. And so the warning system will allow you to fly in the area, but it'll give you a warning. And they're saying it's a personal responsibility to continue or not on the drone pilot. So they're basically going to the honor system.
Yeah. And again, some of the stuff I read on Reddit were that some pilots were saying they were getting geofenced when they weren't where they say the TFR was.
Okay.
And they didn't feel like it was fair. Thank you. False negatives. So... does that apply to this fire? No, but I'm suggesting that I think if there's a fire and there's planes doing firefighting, the TFR needs to be TFR times two, the MAGA TFR, you know, it's like, do not even, you know, consider flying in this.
Yeah, I mean, I generally feel like whether it's flying drones or anything else, the government shouldn't be preventing you from doing dumb things. It should be your own decision to do dumb things. However, the optics of them doing it right after this collision is not pleasant.
Like, no.
Why would they do that now?
I think it was a set date. If you're looking at that, Fitz, I believe it said it was set for January 13th, but they had planned that months ago.
Well,
yeah, like it was a rollout date.
Yeah, let's reel that one back in, fellas. So, all right.
It said it went into effect January 13th.
Yeah, put your tinfoil hat on and have the government saying, let's fly this drone into this airplane. Someone who's really good, see if you can nail that airplane so we can get that DJI geofence switched back on.
But I mean, they have a point that sometimes you did get a lot of false negatives. I had that happen to me once. I was... for our Connecticut folks, I was in Merry Mountain in Connecticut. And so, well, I'm already up, I don't know how high the mountain is, 1,000 feet maybe. And so it wouldn't let me, it did, but it was really bitching and moaning that I was in a, not a TFR, but a zone where an airport was nearby. And it was an airport, I think, maybe Meriden Airport or Plainville. You know, no airplane is going to be anywhere near me because they got to be 500 or 1,000 feet above where I am. And I wasn't going any higher than maybe 20 feet because I was already at the top of a mountain. So there wasn't any point for it to be warning me like, hey, there's an airport nearby. I'm not going anywhere near the airport. I'm just taking off right here. But, you know, it's a case where one of those edge cases where I was completely safe where I was flying. But because it didn't really know my altitude, it just said, hey, you're kind of near an airport. You know, you probably shouldn't be flying kind of thing. So.
Yeah, I think in general, I agree with that policy of not, like I said before, allowing people to do dumb things. Don't, like, as if your car would not exceed the speed limit. That would be, like, to me, an oppressive thing to do. So give me the freedom to do my own dumb stuff and then punish me if I get caught. But I just think the timing of them rolling this out, even if it was planned beforehand, that is just not a good look for them or and by association, the hobby that we're lumped in with them. So, that's weird. Very weird. Lee, you're biting your tongue now. Is there more you want to add?
No.
Okay.
I think it's a long discussion, and I know some people just hate it, and I'm not happy that it happened. But again, I'm not trying to be the devil's advocate to support it. I'm just saying if this guy was, in fact, flying over water and the plane hit him at under 400 feet, it's like, can you really go after him with full force and $75,000 fine?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if there was some kind of loophole here that he unintentionally or intentionally got through.
Yeah.
Or if he was just, you know,
I have to add, again, we don't know the information. I've heard someone's name mentioned, and there was one comment that this guy had been posting videos for all, you know, for several days and, you know, at night, and they were all within the TFR, and all the videos are now down. I don't have that evidence. And then if that's the case, then yes, I think the guy should get in trouble. Absolutely. That's insane. But again, I want to make sure that if this happened, but again, let's throw this scenario. If this happened, it was a firefighter. If there was a Part 107 firefighter whose job was to go, you know, do in their infrared look, okay, and he got hit by one of the aircraft, helicopter, whatever, I mean, aren't you going to react a little differently? Would you respond differently to this?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's a data point where you improve that coordination between authorities or whoever when you're trying to make this stuff better. So, yeah, that's a completely different scenario than some dumbass with his toy trying to get more hits on Instagram.
And that's the point I'm trying to make. Thank you. It is a completely different point. So you have to treat each one separately because I think there are situations where it is okay, and obviously there are times when it's just stupid. Just don't freaking do it. Okay.
Did you guys hear? I swore I heard a story today or yesterday of a drone that went out of control and temporarily shut down an airport. Did you hear about that?
No.
But it was a case of the person. At least the report I heard, it was they were legal. It was somebody, it was a contractor or somebody doing some work. They were flying under 107, whatever, they were legal. But somehow they lost control of it and went off and crashed. And they had to shut down a runway briefly to go get it. Yeah.
Talk about the walk of shame.
Yeah.
Now, I did hear about another incident. Or maybe it was a couple, but the drone light shows, and then they kind of went berserk, and they just started falling.
Oh, yeah,
the sky.
I saw that video. Yeah.
Yeah, and some kid got hurt.
Yeah, one of them was like screaming into a crowd or something.
Yeah, there was video of it coming in, and it was not floating down. It was
That was no return to home, unless it thought return to home was 500 miles away. It was booking. I mean, several of them were booking.
Yeah, that was put the brick on the gas pedal.
Yeah, right.
Return, yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like there's been an uptick in weird drone stuff going on lately. So, like you said, they put on your tinfoil hat and create
sunspots.
I don't want to let this thing go too long, but I am putting my tinfoil hat on. There's this discussion about the plane that landed in Kazakhstan because they got hit by the, you know, they were hit by the Russian missile.
Yeah.
And then they were trying to figure out why it was flying so far and got redirected. And some people use the term GPS spoofing, like, why did it fly so far away? Well, I think that got quickly debunked because what it turned out to be was that they were trying to land at that airport, but they were denied and they were redirected. They were told to go to Kazakhstan, but their crazy flight path was because they had no hydraulics or something. They were just completely helpless. So that GPS spoofing story was quickly demolished. But then there was talk about that drone show. And there was one in China, too, where several of them just dropped out of the sky. And some people were wondering if GPS spoofing, is it real? Where if the drones cannot get the satellite coordinates, if they are told to just turn off and land. Like just, you know, if they're not knowing where they are. Well, yeah, free fall out. Because if you saw the one in China, you have to look it up. But there were just tons of them, 20, 30 just dropping out of the sky into the water.
Dropping out of the sky like that. So you can have
just
inertial,
a controlled descent or something.
Controlled descent. I agree.
And some sort of initial navigation or inertial.
But so Yeah, I agree. So that was weird that those were just falling out of the sky. And then that show we saw where the kid unfortunately did get hurt, they looked like they had contact. Some hit each other. But then as soon as that happened, there was a disarray and several just went shooting into different directions, which didn't make any sense.
Yeah, so that's a lack of safety systems.
Well, here's our drones are bad portion of the show. Drones are bad.
Don't do drones. All right. Well, speaking of fires.
Okay. That happy note.
Let's get more morbid.
So there was another recent article of a store in some suburb of Boston. There's a video of it, just some sort of battery, I assume a LiPo, just bursting into flames. What's unclear to me is if it was just sitting there static or if it was under charge or discharge at the time. Do you guys happen to know the answer to that?
You know, I don't know the answer, but I did leave a comment. I think our buddy Eric Williams had posted it. I was trying to pull it up, and he was sharing it on his page.
Is that his district? Does that include? Anyway, doesn't matter.
I don't know if it is, but he shared it, and there were a couple of people commenting. It's like, why is that person in the back not doing anything? If you look at the video, and unfortunately the fire department put a banner or something over it so you really couldn't tell, but there was someone standing back there just looking at it. When the fire was really going, The guy just kind of walked away. He didn't run, like looking for a fire extinguisher or anything. He just kind of walked away. And so there are questions, and I haven't found it, Terry. I don't know if you've gotten any more details, but no one has said anything if it was charging, because it was with a whole bunch of other batteries. And it didn't
look like a display.
Exactly. It looked like a display. So could it have been someone put it there? Could it have been that it was on a balancer or something that you can't see? Because it didn't look like a charging station. Mm-hmm.
So this is interesting because we had our club meeting a few nights ago, and we were talking about actually one of my friends here recently had an incident in their basement with a LiPo catching on fire. They got it out before any real damage was done, but we started talking about the details of that in the meeting, and it quickly became apparent to me that several members in the club who tend to fly electrics were unaware of some of the basics of handling LiPos. They weren't aware of storage charging, and they didn't necessarily know about balance charging and other stuff like that. And so I think as popular as electrics are, there's still kind of a gap in the knowledge base for people to do this stuff. But one of the things that I brought up, and I may eat those words now, but I think 99% of fires happen during charge and less so during discharge. But just a static battery that hasn't been touched in a while, I feel like those are pretty stable.
Yeah, that seems very unlikely. Yeah, so, unless it had been overcharged, but I would think that would happen pretty soon after you had overcharged it.
Yeah, I would think so too. So if any of you out there listening have had a battery just spontaneously just burst into flames or whatever, not because it's been charged or discharged recently, I'd like to hear about that. But in my experience and what I've seen, it's almost always going to be on discharge, and at least half of those are going to be because somebody did something dumb on the charge setup.
Well, my two fires were charged. One was user error, one was bad battery. So, and it's funny because my user error was I was using the taps, you know. I was like, I'm going to make sure they're balanced, but I was balancing the wrong battery. It needs more juice.
I think a shorted battery, too, could go into thermal.
Easily. Yeah.
Thermal overload. Yeah. Thermal runaway, excuse me.
And actually, Lee, I hope you don't mind. I didn't use your name, but I used your experience as an example that it was a multiple output charger. You put the power leads in the batteries and then somehow swapped the balance leads on the ports. So I guess the charger got all confused and said, screw this, fire.
Fire.
And so is this the video of the shop?
And I can't zoom in or anything, but it's just sitting there. As you can see, all these other batteries are here.
There's a person in there?
Like a crowd. Oh,
yeah. There's a person right here.
Yeah, there's a guy
There's a person
the
just
back.
Standing there. But see, they just walked away.
It's on fire. You don't grab an extinguisher. You don't blow on it. You don't do anything.
Yeah, well, so it's looping here. But do you see how it's definitely going off? I mean, That's not smoke of something burning. That's the inside of the battery escaping. You know, that's the, what are they
called? And you're going to hear
the vent too. Venting. Oh, yeah, you can hear the vent.
See it, hear it, smell it. Now, Fitz, yeah, you said grab an extinguisher. A standard extinguisher is not going to do anything to that, right?
I know. It's just as a response in the moment.
Also a fire retardant and everything else around it.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody doesn't know that. They don't know much about battery technology. They're going to grab a fire extinguisher.
But look at this person. They're just standing. You can see this person. See, they're just standing here. They clearly see it. They're looking at it. And they just
push it away from all the other batteries.
Yeah,
that is, I don't want to use the word suspicious, but I can't think of anything else right now. That's weird.
Right. Yeah, but that's a good point. People should know that. Yeah, once these things go into thermal runaway, you're not going to be able to put them out. They're just going to, you got to let them burn and keep them away from everything else. Yeah, go ahead.
There are extinguishers that will mitigate that, right? I thought there were lipo-specific.
It's really difficult because it generates its own oxygen, right? Or methane.
I don't know.
It basically generates its own fuel as it's burning, so it's really difficult to put out.
Yeah, I think that's why most fields have the sand buckets. You're not going to put it out.
Yeah.
Your best bet is to contain it.
Yeah.
Have you seen the videos of people setting them off, though, in lipo bags? You know, the charging bags?
I'm sure I have.
Yeah, they get pretty big, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
still wouldn't feel safe around one of those things.
Yeah, and the bags are sacrificial. They're going to mitigate the effects of the battery eating itself to a small or big degree. And the instance here, my buddy had the bag. It wasn't fully closed, according to him, but there was the battery that went off and other batteries in it. So he had the combined effect of multiple batteries. And he did have a little bit of damage. Stuff flew out of the bag and got on some airplanes before he was able to get it out of the house. But, yeah, it's... probably without that bag, it would have been much, much worse.
Yeah. So. PSA, be safe out there.
Yeah.
I try to always charge in a Pyrex bowl or keep everything else away.
Yep.
So I looked at it real quick. Looks like there's something called a Class D fire extinguisher.
Okay.
Specifically for lithium and magnesium.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, magnesium is bad stuff, too.
Or lithium sodium. So, yeah. So, yeah, apparently yours is, but it's... I don't think that's very common, right? A Class D uses ABC.
I think they're very expensive.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when a Tesla goes up, it's done.
Yeah, here it is.
I see these firemen just pumping water in these things, and they're never going anywhere.
Yeah, it says, somebody wrote, Class D extinguishers aren't as readily available because you can't use them on any other type of fire.
Hmm. All right, interesting. So I think we're going to name this episode Conspiracy Theories.
Okay.
Yeah. Grab your tinfoil hat.
Or tinfoil hats. That's a good one, too.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. All right. Is there any more you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, we probably should wrap it up. It's been going for quite a while.
Well, okay. Fitz might be going to Georgetown this weekend, so that's a swap meet we tend to go to. I'm not sure I'll be able to make it. If I think I can, I'll call him Friday and say, come pick me up. I'm on his way.
good point. My current plan is also to go to a swap meet this weekend, the Rock River Air Modelers Society in Beloit, which is down near the Illinois border. Yeah. Our buddy Phil Hinkle, that's his club.
Oh,
and
cool.
I believe that our friends from RC Plane Lab are going to be there as well. So maybe I'll get to see them.
Please take some photos and share them with us.
Yeah, I will. Now, I went to this one last year. I've probably talked about this. I had to do kind of a round robin because two of my kids were flying out that same day. So I had to take them down through Chicago, drop them off at the airport, and then go over to the thing. By the time I got to the swap meet, I forget what time it was, 10 or 11, it was done.
That skills has been picked.
Yeah, I was the salmon swimming upstream as I walked in there. I don't have to go to the airport this time. I should get there earlier. And they've got it at a bigger location. Last year, they were in a smaller place, and apparently it was jam-packed. So it'll be a new, bigger place this time, and looking forward to giving it a go.
All right, well, good luck.
Thanks. All right, that's it. So I guess we ran out of time for Tyler Perry. We'll have him on the next show then. Sorry, Tyler.
Sorry, Tyler.
All right, next time, maybe. Our people call your people.
Yeah. So. All right, Fitz. That's your cue.
I got nothing. See ya. Goodbye. Thanks, everybody, for watching, listening, absorbing, osmosising our this fine episode of RC Roundtable. Any comments, send us to contact@rcroundtable.com. Hate mail, of course, goes to Terry. Check out our... That's right. You've been hereby designated. If you're listening to this, check us out at youtube.com/RCRoundtable. Check us out. Like and subscribe, of course. And leave some feedback. If you listen to any of the various podcast distribution methods, we'd like to hear from you and give us a good sign for the algorithms. And, of course, check us out. We're also on Facebook. And I think we have Instagram, right? Instagram?
We do have Instagram.
That we never post to. But we're pretty active on Facebook. I know, hey, Zuckerberg's turning a new corner. So maybe if you're not a Facebooker, maybe you can take a peek.
So, come on back.
Come on back, yeah.
He's popular again.
Apparently, he all kinds of mea culpa. So check us out on Facebook. We will post lots of cool stuff on there as well. So anyways, any last words before we head out, gentlemen?
I got one. As we were recording tonight, during this whole conversation, we received an email about another swap meet. This one's in Minneapolis on February 1st. That's a Saturday. And actually, it's not a swap meet. He's calling it an auction. So, I think it's mostly auction. Maybe there's some... set price stuff too, but it looks like it's a big deal. I've never been to this one. I'm not sure I can make it this time. I'm going to look at my schedule and see. It's like a 4-hour trip each way. But my son lives there, so I can make it worthwhile. Daryl, thank you. What's that?
We can crash at his place.
No.
Okay.
So anyway, Daryl, thank you for sending this information. I'll look into it and see what I can make happen. For everybody else, head to Minneapolis on February 1st, the TCRC 48th Annual Auction. All right. That's all I have.
All right. That's a good little go back. All right. Hopefully next time we get to have some good stories about swap meet finds and stuff like that.
And maiden flights.
And remaiden flights.
You're talking to me? Yeah. Yeah. Both hopefully. You. We'll see. We'll see the all weather right. pending. Oakley Doakley. On that note, we'll see you guys later and see you next time.
Bye.
Sayonara.
Please visit our website at rcroundtable.com. That's where you will find all of our podcast episodes. You can also find a little bit of background information about the show host and leave comments and suggestions about the show. There are links to a few of our favorite vendors and also links to our various social media accounts. Thank you for watching and listening.